Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Now, back in the 1980s, where I used to be involved with a company called Film Education, the idea that David Putnam had put forward was that actually we needed to actually produce something to show the magic of the film industry, to actually ensure that it was a terrific employer and indeed opened up a whole vast array of things that can actually work in terms of making a movie. Fast forward some 3.5 to 4 decades, and it would still seem that the film industry is a terrific employer, potentially. But what about the whole notion of young people who clearly are now collating their A-level results, they're effectively going to consider their next careers, etc. Should they consider working within the film and television industries, particularly in the UK, when you see that so over £6.2 billion were actually spent last year in terms of the industry itself? Well, the ideal person to actually speak to about this is somebody who's got her own career behind her and indeed is still very much part of the whole thing. Director and producer extraordinaire, Holly Tarquini. How are you, Holly?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self, and fascinated to see that obviously this notion that I suppose you could always say back in the days of Tony Blair and Cool Britannia, the cultural sector industry is still a potential source of employment for young people, no matter what their interest may be, whether they're actually interested in filmmaking or finance or production or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, there's been recent research that says that 53% of school leavers would really like to work in film and television, but only 18% of them think that it's achievable. So I think the interest is definitely there because we're all consuming this stuff all of the time, aren't we? So we can see how interesting it is and how attractive it might be to be involved in the making of it. But I think a lot of young people either don't know how to or see it as a very unstable industry, which it can be. Yes. So I think it is. It still has that kind of zing and glow to it, doesn't it?
I mean, from your own point of view, Holly, what was it that persuaded your good self to actually have a career in the industry? Because, I mean, you produce documentaries and everything from Pet Rescue through to the history of the paparazzi, etc. What effectively, you know, led you to this? And of course, you're also executive director of Film Bath, which, of course, used to be the Bath Film Festival.
Yes, I've been incredibly, incredibly lucky stroke privileged in my career. So I started off as a researcher, and I started off as a researcher because I get very interested in things and want to find out everything about them. At the time, it was all about phoning people up, and I loved speaking to people on the phone. And what I really loved about research was being allowed to phone up people that knew everything about a topic and being able to ask them every question I could about it and learn all about it. It was, for me, the perfect and the most interesting job. And I then quite quickly got very interested in editing, in operating the cameras, in doing the sound. And this was the time, it was just as everything was transitioning into digital. So it was when now there are lots of what are called self-shooting producer directors. And then it was right at the beginning of it. So I was one of the first that was operating the camera, doing the lights, doing the sound. Sometimes I was helping with the editing as well. So I was able to learn and do every part of production, which was, for me, absolutely brilliant. And yeah, one of the crucial bits that we've all been looking at recently is the budgeting and bookkeeping and accountancy side of it, which is obviously essential because you have to create a budget in the first place in order to get a television program or a film commissioned. You have to submit a budget and agree to it, and then you have to stick to the budget and deliver what you've said you're going to deliver according to that budget. And it's a really interesting avenue into film and television because I think it's not one that is often seen. And the training of, so there's the Association of Accounting Technicians, the AAT, which offers various different forms of training. And it means that you've got qualifications kind of in your backpack that you can use to get into film and television, but also are obviously really transferable skills into a myriad of other industries. So that's a really interesting pathway in.
Now, later on in this program, we're going to be speaking to a BAFTA award-winning director, Graham Harper, who's a regular correspondent. We'll be going over to Los Angeles to speak to Juliette Lamar, who's a multi-broadcast solo. And we've got Luke Carradine, who's a film composer, who's going to be chatting to us from his base in Portugal. But in terms of the whole sequence, I mean, there's a vast array of material there. And I can guarantee you, we will be discussing the whole notion of, well, is the film industry still thrivable in an era of ChatGPT? Because obviously, you mentioned obviously the notions of film companies and areas with respect to that. The gaming industry is obviously nudging into play. And of course, we have an environment where there's a writer's strike in Hollywood. Lots of challenges there, Holly. I mean, what would your advice be for somebody who says they might be keen to pursue some work in the film industry, but sometimes it's overwhelming in terms of all of the things that seem to be happening?
Yeah, I think it is really overwhelming. And I think it is also represented as really overwhelming. So I think there's always been a very strong narrative around film and television that it's a very difficult industry to get into, that it's super competitive. And it is all of those things. But actually, for people that for whom that's their passion and that's what they want to do, there are so many different roles. So my husband, for example, is a prop maker and a set builder and a carpenter, and his avenue into film and television was carpentry. And so I think it's a bit of an obscure world, and what we need to do is reveal all of those different elements, because really a film particularly requires so many skills. I mean, almost anything that you could think of are required on a film set. And it's not a closed industry anymore. It is very open to all of the underrepresented voices who have historically been excluded from it. So I would say, although it seems really overwhelming, it is still a fantastic, fantastic industry. It needs to get a lot better, especially when it comes to women and people taking care of other people. But it is so much better than it was. And I think it is a really good option. And interestingly, I've been using ChatGPT recently, and I understand why everybody's on strike. It is brilliant.
Now, it's nearly 9 years since you founded the internationally recognized F rating, of course, given to every film which is written and or directed by a woman. Are we seeing much greater progress with respect to that? I mean, clearly, Greta Gerwig, I think, this has become the first female director to crash that £1 billion mark with Barbie, of course.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And the press that Barbie's getting, and that such an overtly feminist film is doing so brilliantly, that it is being loved by such a massive range of people, is brilliant. And those kinds of stories are really helpful. I mean, the story of her making a billion, of Margot Robbie being the producer and doing so well as the producer, and kind of in one film, it sort of smashes that age-old stereotype that you can either be beautiful or you can be brilliant. And I think Margot Robbie in One Human shows that you can be both. You don't have to choose one path or the other. There is still a massive discrepancy in who tells the stories that we predominantly see on screen and how well those stories get backed in marketing. So Barbie is an anomaly. The reason is a headline saying that that Greta Gerwig has made a billion is because she's the first woman to do that, obviously, as you said. So there is still a huge discrepancy, but nowadays, so the BFI, the British Film Institute, who fund lots of British films, they will not fund your film if it's all made by only one type of person. So if you had a film, unless there was a really good reason for it, if you had a film which was entirely crewed by straight white men, not that there's anything wrong with straight white men, but if it was just one type of person, if it was just one type of perspective, they wouldn't give you the funding for it, and BAFTA wouldn't then recognise it. So there have been monumental shifts, but it takes time. And at the moment, those changes haven't been made, and there is also a huge backlash. So it's an interesting time.
Although I can sense the passion that's coming across here. But we do also in Britain have a situation whereby certainly there's an agenda politically to actually say it's no good going off to university to actually study film or production or areas from that point of view. You need to actually go down the line of science, technology, engineering and maths and forget the STEAM, the artistic side of things from that point of view. If somebody's listening to this, either as a parent or indeed as a teenager who's just actually quite fancies working within the film industry, etc., but doesn't want to be put off by, as we've said, some of those huge issues that are out there, and indeed the drive to actually say, get yourself some sensible skills, what would your advice be?
Yeah, I think I don't really understand why people still tell that story, because the arts are everything. They're what make us human. The stories are what create us. They're what feed our imaginations. They are everything. And in most people's lives now, they're the most significant thing. They're what we do with our spare time. We watch and listen and interact with stories. So yeah, I don't understand that. And it's a massive industry. As you say, it's a multi-million pound industry in the UK. And it is the one thing now, I think, other than finance, that we're known for internationally is our film, television, games, VFX. You know, it's no coincidence that Star Wars and Indiana Jones and everything are made in the UK, because it's what we're really, really good at. And I think especially with the accountancy avenue in, it gives you something which is transferable. So obviously, if you've got an accountancy qualification, then you can use that in film, in television, in games, in theatre, but you can also use it in accountancy. You can use it as a freelance. So it's a really interesting route in. I mean, ironically, my 18-year-old, who's just about to finish she's at A-level completion, is going to study film and television. I'd be much happier if she was going to study accountancy in order to get into film and television, because it would give her really practical skills that are transferable.
Holly, it's been fascinating sharing some thoughts with your good self. I almost feel the same sense of passion that I used to get from David Putnam back in the day in the 1980s. It's good to see it still working through in all sorts of ways. And as strategic advisor for the British Film Institute, the BFI are in safe hands. But where, Holly, would you point people to actually find out further information about what we've been chatting about today?
Yeah, so they need to go to AAT, which is the Association of Accounting and Technicians. And I would also advise going and checking out Screen Skills. So Screen Skills will tell you what all the roles in the television and film industry are and how to get there.
And for those folk who wish to check out your own podcast, F-Rated, where should they go?
So the F-Rated podcast is available on all platforms. And yes, just Google the F, which is for feminist, and that's intersectional feminist, -rated podcast.
Holly Tarquini, huge thanks, and keep on making and watching those movies.
Thank you, Alex.
Oh,
Well, we're into the second part of the Midweek Drive. Not quite live. We call it the environmentally friendly edition of the Midweek Drive because we're using the magic of Zoom to interconnect and do all sorts of other great things. And we do have, as we mentioned in the tease part of the first hour, Victoria Simmons with us. Victoria, this hopefully will be happening. You will be performing live in Lincoln in November 2023. I mean, I'm saying that now. I'm releasing the whole aspect out there. So would you like to just share with us a little bit more about how you'll also be joined by our other good Midweek Drivette, Chloe Rose, for this one?
I think you all explained it there, really, Alex. Yeah, we're going to be doing... Hopefully, show for a lot of people, if everybody can make it. I really hope that so many people are going to make this because it will be me and Chloe doing all our own songs and hopefully introducing them to even more people at Lincoln University.
Exactly. We may even have a quiz as well. Now, Jessica, if that's not enough to actually get you across the Atlantic to make a visit back to Lincoln, to see not one, but two Midweek Drivettes performing in concert. I mean, I don't know what is, frankly. I mean, surely it's the equivalent to Taylor Swift actually turning up on your doorstep, really, isn't it?
It is. This sounds like I wish I was there right now. There's so many things that have been happening that I need to be over there for.
Well, just in case you're worried too much, apparently scientists are already saying that there could be another COVID outbreak on the way and it might be time to mask up. So I'm just saying, you know, it's something I'll share around the whole system.
We don't need this.
It's, you know, just if you're sort of missing those masks and missing those environments, is actually there that there is a more challenging form of COVID that could well be heading to us as well. Anyway, Toast is back with us. We haven't as yet actually managed to welcome either Juliet nor indeed the wondrous Graham Harper to the whole piece. Maybe that's because they're too busy, but we were actually looking at a key aspect, which we did actually feature in the first part of this hour, which is all about the notion of the film industry and how actually probably one of the best routes to get into the film industry, if you're looking to actually enter the wonderful world of movie making and so on, is not necessarily to do a media-oriented program, but to actually do a qualification in accountancy. Why is this important? Well, it's all to do with budgets and other areas related to that as well. So we heard the views of producer and director of Film Bath and founder of the podcast F-Rated, Holly Tarquini. I'm just wondering, because obviously, Victoria, you are in the entertainment industry, etc. Did anybody ever suggest what you really should do, Victoria, if you want to be an ace musician, is do an accountancy qualification?
No, but I can see how that actually would come in quite useful. But I originally trained in fashion, and it was in part of our course to learn about budgets, marketing, law, finance. So even on other creative things that I've been a part of, you do actually have to learn all of this. Because at the end of the day, as an actor, as a singer, that is you are your own business. So you should be able to handle every side of that business, from marketing to accountancy to every little tiny aspect. You should know exactly what's going on, so that if something goes wrong, either you can be prepared and fix it, or you haven't made that problem in the first place because you knew what you were doing.
Well, you've raised some interesting points there, and that's when we turn to a lady I've always described as Los Angeles' answer to Renaissance woman when it comes to broadcast media. She does her own news report. She videos the news report. She does everything in all sorts of ways. She's a positive tour de force of actually putting things together. It's Juliet Lamar. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, Juliet?
I'm great, Alex. Nice to see you again. Hello, everyone.
Well, we figured August time comes around. We need to connect with your good self. It's been far too long since we last spoke. But we're just talking about the movie business and the world within the movie industry and the best way forward to actually enter that here in the 21st century. The conclusion, as we said, of the producer and director of Film Bath, That's indeed the Bath Film Festival. Used to be, now it's called Film Bath. I see what they did there. Holly Tarkini, she maintains you should actually do a degree in accountancy. So over half of young people in Britain who are interested in a career in television and film, they could pursue that because only 18% actually think it's realistic. Basically, that you know, less than one in five young people actually really have any hope or faith in themselves. So, Julia, in the States, what, I mean, did you ever sort of think, do you know, I want to work in the media, so I'm going to do a degree in accountancy?
No, but I did get my degree in broadcast journalism and TV film production, but I did start out as an econ major, economics. I took one class of microeconomics and I thought, this is not for me. It's way too much math. But that was my thought process, is it's show business. So, you know, you have to be good at the show, but you also have to be good at the business. So that thought did cross my mind. And I think now working in the professional field, that there should have been more business taught in that degree, for journalism as well, just how things work as far as, you know, getting a job and where to find them and whatnot.
So echoing Victoria's lines there in France as well. Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning director, of course, back, of course, on the Midweek Drive, regular from this perspective. You, of course, started off as a child actor before you decided to enter the world of directing and so on via, I seem to recall, doing some work as a driving instructor.
I did. I didn't go to university. I studied drama as a child till I was 16. And then sort of did all sorts of jobs, and as well as acting, and then changed my whole career and decided to go into production and see if I could make my way up to become a director. But I did it with no education really whatsoever. I certainly don't have any degrees or any proof that I've had any.
But Graham, you've got the degree of life. All of those aspects that actually work through that. And besides, you know, you can learn so much on the floor of the BBC, but let's not go there because that's a whole other place. Julia, would you like to just share with us what you've been doing through the month of August so far? Because, I mean, I always find, once again, the kind of schedules you keep to pretty prolific, but just share with us your kind of standard day-to-day activities. You don't have to go through the whole lot because, frankly, we haven't got 3 days' time. So just talk us through the sort of key points you've been doing.
I always love coming on here with Alex because he makes you feel so awesome. You're like, oh, prolific and my name are mentioned in the same sentence. I love it.
Everything is awesome. Did you not see the Lego movie?
I didn't. I should. That's what I need in my life more. So what's been going on? I've been doing a lot of work, of course, with the veterans, the U.S. veterans. There's the largest VA, which is the Veteran Affairs campus. One of the largest in the country is here in West Los Angeles. So I cover them a lot. And man, there's a lot of just despicable things going on in regards to how our unhoused veterans are treated and the services that they can and cannot get. So I cover the unhoused veterans quite a bit. And most recently, there's you know, there's this land that they are supposed to be able to use for housing. And it used to house, the long short of it, it used to house like 5,000 veterans. When they came back from the war, they could come there and convalesce. And then slowly in the 80s, this land started being rented out by the VA to private entities for profit. And that these entities did not benefit veterans at all. So these leases of land have been found to be illegal. And it's been a fight since the 80s for veterans and advocates to now claw back the land to try and have housing again. And so the most recent thing is there's a private school that leases out 22 acres of this 388-acre property. And they were trying to change a leasing law here in LA. They were lobbying to change it to try and solidify their current illegal lease on the property. So a lot of shenanigans going on, but you know, we're out here in the streets trying to hold people accountable and stand up for people who don't have the voice that they should, like the homeless veterans.
And that's a really important part of the whole process. If I was to push you and say, what do you prefer, the hard news story like the one you've just described, or the more fluffy news story of which, I don't know, you probably can find several of them just walking out of the door in Hollywood?
You know, I think that I prefer to cover the fluffy news because it doesn't make me sad. But, you know, I, in my heart, want to try to create change. You know, you don't make a lot of money in this industry. And so I always joke, like, I don't make money, I make change. And when you cover things like the unhoused veterans, or I did something about short-term leases kicking out long-term residents, you know, you do these stories that maybe only affect a few thousand people. It matters to those few thousand people, and you are causing change. And so, yeah, it's more fun to cover the fluffy stuff. Absolutely. But I think in the long run, when I look back at my career and look forward in what I want to do, it more is the hard news, not politics, but accountability of large organizations to the people that they serve.
Tosin, we talked about entries into the business, etc. We spoke in the past about the Nigerian film industry and how that connects and relates with that. What would your thoughts be in terms of where do you say, I mean, you're doing your master's degree at present in communications and PR at the University of Lincoln. You're developing that process. Where do you see your own career pathway going?
Well, it's crazy because it's like a two-way street right now where I have an interest in music and like the behind the scenes of music and business of music and how it works, not only Afrobeats, but like global music. And I also love broadcasting on radio and talking on radio and just being an host and talking to people and like enjoying experiences and talking about music too. So it's kind of a two-way street where my career path can either be or still on radio and just be in the background, maybe a producer or be an host, it depends. Or I would enter the music industry and try and be an ARL artist, a production manager, or just something behind the scenes that pushes the artist to be a better person or like the record label to listen. So it's between those two places. But I think no matter where I end up, I think I will enjoy it because I enjoy those two parts and it's just really cool. And the thing about the accounting, I can see it being a reasonable way to enter because not a lot of people think about being an accountant in the entertainment industry. And even in Nigeria too, I think a lot of people would want to take the route of like, oh, I want to be a production manager or I have to be an apprentice for somebody over the years. Instead of just could go to school, get your accounting degree and apply for like an accounting job and you probably get it because not a lot of people apply for it. And you're in the industry already. So I think it's a cool way to enter the industry. But if you don't love accounting, you'll just probably be sad about it, to be honest.
Well, part of this has obviously come from research by the Association of Accounting Technicians, which sounds like a particularly interesting organisation, which suggests that 67% of young people, that's in the sort of 18 through 20 age bracket, think that the only careers in television and film are acting and creative. Graham, you work for the BBC, you've worked for independent companies, you've developed a whole range of things. Do you feel as though that route of actually doing accountancy could well be a way in to the industry, as indeed Victoria's alluded to, and of course Tosin and the Juliet?
I think, I mean, I wish I'd had an accountancy course of some sort. I think that's really valuable. I'm not sure whether it's the way to get into being a producer and directing. Well, I say that. Producing, yes. Not directing. Where you need accountancy is, A, how to run the production and how to sort out your expenditure. And the other is where you get the money. Now, I'm not sure an accountant is the right person there. I think you need a bank, and you need to be able to approach banks or the guys who've got the money. But accountancy is really important if you're going to run your own production and how you're going to spend that money and how you account for it all. So I don't have that. I don't want it now. I'm too old. But a few years ago, I should have thought about that.
It's never too late, Graham. We've said this time and time again. That's the reason the midweek drives here.
I don't think I've got the time.
Jessica, as we know, you're writing the great American novel whilst you're wrapping up your master's degree in children's literature from the Irish university that is Trinity College Dublin. Any thoughts on what you've been hearing? Any sort of aspects from that point of view? Or is it just a case of in North Carolina, we're so wealthy, we've got, you know, production companies coming in left, right and centre?
Yes, North Carolina is most definitely known for its movie scene with a tiny Hollywood of the East Coast.
Yeah,
I
you are a
think
tiny Hollywood, Juliet. You should move from West Coast to East Coast.
I might as well. It's slowing down out here. Everyone's on strike.
I think oftentimes with subjects that are in the humanities, I think that people often underestimate how skills can transfer. I think that because doing something like film isn't necessarily vocational, like say you study chemical engineering, you work in chemical engineering, whereas if you study film, there's several different applications that that can go towards. Same with accounting. And I think that people tend to underestimate how that transfers between like different fields in the humanities. Like whenever I tell people I do English, their first assumption is, oh, you want to be a teacher. And I think that's true for a lot, and then it's true for it's not true for a lot. And I think that same with film, it's like, oh, you want to go into film, you want to be like a director or an actor, and someone's saying, well, no, because with movie credit, you know, there's all those credits, hundreds of people who you don't see their face, they're not directing, but the movie still wouldn't exist without them.
Absolutely. Now, Victoria, you have actually met Graham in real life, as we proved there, with the reference to obviously the Midweek Drive on location in London a few weeks ago. Graham, of course, not looking a day over 167, which is always good. And
Thanks.
Kathy and Richard Fitzwilliams. Vic, any questions you'd like to put to Graham now? You've actually had a chance to take away from the fangirl Doctor Who notion of meeting the director of so many of David Tennant's classics. What would you like to put to Graham? Or indeed, have you got any questions you'd like to set for the team? She's frozen with the whole scenario. Go, Victoria.
Am I frozen? Okay. Well, how much, probably to everybody, but how many sectors of the industry either have you worked in or would you consider you are working in at the same time as what you're actually working in? So if you're in, I don't know, film, are you also sidelining something else that seems like the accountancy that sort of
Okay, I think we've
going
got a
in
gist of that.
together. Does that make sense?
Juliet, you're obviously getting the abacus out and calculator. How many sectors have you worked in?
Harry the five, like, I don't have enough fingers. Gosh, all of it, like, except for accounting, honestly. Yeah, you know, I think when you're starting out, everyone tells you just get your foot in the door. And so I've worked in art department, which was really fun, like props and set design. I've worked in fabrication, which is like making the props. I worked for a fabrication house where we made breakaway props, so breakaway bottles, breakaway chairs, tables, very cool. I worked as a production assistant, and I've worked as a producer. And then with news, when I kind of started going towards news, I started off as just a on-camera talent producer, right? You produce the segment, and then you're on camera, but you have sound people, camera people, an editor, et cetera. And then the pandemic hit, and my job was like, can you do all of that? Can you film it yourself, edit yourself, and all that? And I was like, yes, I could not. I had no idea how to edit. I had no idea how to do any of this. But I think in this industry, you have to trust yourself. And I did. I trusted myself that I was smart, that I was capable. And within a month or so, you know, I took a course on for Adobe Premiere. I already knew how to audio edit because I had taught myself that through podcasting years earlier. You know, I just did a deep dive on cameras, and within a month or so, I had a decent grasp on how to become a multimedia journalist, which means you create an entire story on your own from conception to completion, one person. And I had not been able to do that skill before, but you have to adapt in this industry. And I always tell this quote, is my favorite quote, you have to have confidence in yourself and then be tough enough to follow through. And those are the two things that you need in this industry, confidence and toughness.
And if memory serves, actually, Juliet, it was the pandemic that brought you to on our radar in the first place. And when it was part of due to the pandemic, we invited you to join us on the Midweek Drive. So there we are. It just
Oh,
shows
there we are, full circle.
how
And this is, you know,
exactly.
my crowning accomplishment here. So
Well, there's a lot of ways to go. Yeah. Graham, what about yourself in terms of the question of Victoria? How many areas have you worked in? Because you certainly followed the routes through the BBC, as if memory serves.
I did. So when I was 16, I left drama school. The first acting jobs, I did some television work as a young actor. But along the ways when I was actually out of work, I applied to school tours. So six actors, a van and scenery and lots of breakaway props. I'm going to call them that because that would be for Juliet. And we toured schools doing Shakespeare. So I learned how to learn Shakespeare very quickly. I learned how to read the speeches from a book that another actor held up at the side of the stage because I'd forgotten the lines. Sometimes the books were upside down, so that was useful. I did all the driving. So I went, I got to know England and where all the schools were. Eventually, when I became, got a job at the BBC and stayed there for 14 years, I worked as a runner in the studios. So that meant I worked in drama. I did Maths Today. I worked on political programmes. I worked on comedy programmes, documentaries. So I had a huge insight into how all those different programmes were made as multi-camera studios. Eventually, I got a job as an assistant director, a second assistant, and then a first, and then became a director. All of which you had to kind of shout out for and beg, will you give me the call so I can go on that? But in the time that I was off or when I was free at the BBC, I would ask the manager of my department, which was drama, if I could go have an attachment for 3 months to the editing department and to costume, exactly as Juliet. I actually didn't end up making anything because I'm actually colourblind and I think they didn't trust me on any of that. But I got to know how all those departments ran and how you actually made contact with them and how they worked. So I had a really good insight in what all the people do that you're talking about who have masses of credits at the end of a film. I got to know what most of those people did.
I think that also that really helped, Graham, like when you're saying that, having worked in so many departments, it gave me such a respect so that when I was being on camera talent or when I was a producer, or I was directing, I knew the capacity of what I could ask of those departments. And I think it made me a better contributor in whatever department I was serving, right? Because you have that know-how of what they need from you and what you can ask of them.
I agree with that. And the other thing is, if you want to be a good leader, the start is when you're, especially as a director, well, as a first, you learn it. Get to know everybody's names. Don't say, oi, you, or get to know your crew's name. You every time you do a production, you've got a whole batch of different people doing those same jobs. Get to know their names and refer to them by their names. It takes your time. You won't do it in a day. You'll do it if you're a six-week shoot. You'll get to know everybody definitely by the end of 6 weeks. But within 2 weeks, you should really know everybody's names or most of the crew. They appreciate that and feel part of the production when you talk to them by their name.
So soon. Thoughts from yourself. Do you know everybody's name on Afrobeats, or is it just a case of they're just minions? I just guide them in certain ways.
No, I have to because I can't say oi, like it feels weird. I have to know the name. Well, I know a lot, so at the same time, if I don't know the name, I'm a bad person. Well, yeah, thoughts about like working in different parts of the industry. For somebody that I'm still kind of young, but I think I kind of have experience in the sense that I've worked on so many projects, personal projects and projects, collaborations with people in different facets of like creative industry and the cinema industry. The first one is I worked at a broadcasting listing in Nigeria where I was an intern. Well, sometimes my boss would just allow me to stay in the back room of like the broadcast center. And like when they're live and they're doing the cameras, and like I can switch cameras right live. So I was blessed to be able to do that because we're not allowed to do that as interns. But so I made a mistake one time and they told me never to do it again in my life. So that was really cool. Then I've also worked in a radio station. I'm working inside radio too. I worked in a radio station in Nigeria. I've also been a photographer. That was my own personal passion project. I have worked on a magazine before where I was the editor and I was also the designer of the magazine itself. Mm-hmm. And what else? I've been a graphic designer for various people. And yeah, so when it comes to like working, I was just curious about everything in the creative industry and entertainment industry, and I just tried everything out, and some stick, some didn't stick, and that's why I'm now in radio and audio, and I'm just enjoying it, and yeah, it's really cool.
And I think it's fair to say that Tosin was singularly responsible for the hike in the strike situations in Hollywood, because it was he who actually put the question to some of our Hollywood correspondents. So, what about the writers' strike? Within 3 days of putting that question, the actors had come out, and indeed, there's no sign of any movement whatsoever. So, Juliet, you can actually thank Tosin for throwing that into to play with Armin Shimerman, formerly of the Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA. Anyway,
Thanks so much.
No problem. If you need help again, just
Jessica,
call me. I'll be there.
there we are. You see, you can't beat that constant relationship. You know, from LA to Lagos. You know, it's all connected. Jessica, what about your own range of things apart from being obviously the official correspondent for Sweet Tea, for the whole
Yes,
thing, which is a question
important
I know you're
things.
keen to put to Juliet and probably Tosin and Graham as well.
Yeah, should I?
Not yet.
No, okay. I want to.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm really curious, Juliet, about some projects that you're working on. Do you have anything planned for the rest of the year?
I wish. I mean, things are kind of weird right now where I'm working. Every journalism is in like a weird flux zone right now. They don't know what they want to do. I think the old system is broken. I don't like it. And they're trying very quickly to catch up to like how people consume news these days. And I think they're tripping a
It's
lot.
all on
And
X, isn't it, Juliet? I mean,
what
it's all on X. You know, you go onto X and
was that?
Elon
Yes,
Musk connects it. Yeah.
X is where we will get our news now. Yeah, I think that a lot of like the bigger news organizations are definitely tripping and falling over themselves. They're trying their best, but it's hard. But yeah, I think everything's going digital. What was your question again?
Oh, I was just curious about if there's anything that you're working on at the
Oh.
moment or what you're kind of focusing on.
Yeah, so right now I want to do some stories about that are more character driven. I want to really niche down even more. So I do hyperlocal news. So, you know, what's happening in your neighborhood, because that's I think what creates the most change because of the ripples it can create. Because if I report on, you know, the presidential election, everyone's reporting on that. Like, and everyone's got an opinion. But if I report on a local election, that would have more of an impact, I think, at least for what I can touch, what affects my life. So what I'm working on right now, oh, I have this story. I'm going to reach out to them later. There's a potter in LA who is blind, and they became blind in adulthood. And then they found pottery after that. So I want to do a story about this gentleman and how he kind of overcame blindness. Because I think to a lot of people, that would be a very devastating diagnosis to wake up with. And kind of focusing on people's resiliency is going to be something I want to work on. I also would love to do more stuff with prisoners and prisoners' rights. I mean, it's been incredibly hot here in California, and our heat and our fires are going to get worse and worse. And the conditions in our prisons are not great. They're not great. So I would love to do some advocacy journalism, really giving a voice to the incarcerated men and women, especially here in LA, because they're the ones I have access to, for the conditions that they're suffering through, because, you know, they are people too, and they should be being rehabbed, not, you know, tortured. So that's what I would like to start doing in the next few months.
Always good to actually listen to Juliet Lemar's work and life in the universe. We can also welcome a gentleman who we last spoke to, I believe, at the onset of the Ukraine conflict. I believe you headed off from Ukraine to Portugal. You're a composer, you're a producer. Luke Corradine, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Alex, how are you? Thank you for being patient while I was updating, re-updating, accepting codes from Zoom, forgetting passwords, clicking on the pictures. You better get the pictures right, or else you're a robot. So that took a while.
Well, ChatGPT has got an awful lot to actually deal with it. Luke, do you see yourself primarily in the entertainment world as a composer or producer, a hybrid, a human being? Where do you pitch yourself? And obviously, you're coming to this from the European perspective.
I'd like to answer to that question wholeheartedly, 100%, always been 100% composer. I think the producing part came into my life as a way of finding opportunities that were not available to my colleagues. It was a way of survival. It was Darwinism, pure Darwinism. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm not doing as much as I used to. There was a point, you might remember, maybe going back 8 years, where I was fully involved in the production and distribution side of films and financing even. And I was actually doing well, but I somehow lost enthusiasm in the film industry and the people involved in it. Music was always there. It was a better crowd. It was a better scene. It was a warmer world, and one that was always their open arms for me. So these days, I would say 90% of my activities are music.
Well, and I seem to recall when we first met, it took me about 5 or 6 years to realize that you weren't actually French, you were indeed Italian. But that's okay. You know, it's just a complete sort of disconnect on that side of things. That you must join us for a Memento Vivere, our Italian approach with Pamela Suman. Victoria, you're in the music industry, you're listening to Luke. Why aren't you working with Luke Carradine?
I don't know, but he now has my information, and I'm working with a guy in Frankfurt. So, you know, we can always do Zoom things. We do
Zoom
like
is
now.
Yeah, Zoom, WhatsApps, the whole lot. I mean, you know, this is great actually.
And Luke, where are we reaching you today? Where are you?
I'm in Madrid, but I was in Los Angeles recently. We did a great show. I was conducting my own orchestra, the Academy Museum, which is in Wilshire Boulevard. And that was a great show. We had a standing ovation. And I did one of my scores there. It was a very challenging experience because I had to contract musicians there and I didn't know the guys and we had only 3 days rehearsal, but it was fantastic. So I came back from Los Angeles actually 10 days ago. I took a short break and now I'm back at work. So we got more shows coming up. I'm conducting and performing around the clock. So hopefully, yeah.
And Madrid, Rome, Paris, Kiev, London, Los Angeles, any particular preference?
Yeah. Well, I would like to settle in Venice.
There was actually a hint. There was a hint from Juliet, though, which obviously you weren't going in for.
I would like to
LA.
Yeah, I mean, Los Angeles was shocking. I've got to say, I found it in very rough shape. We were walking, can you imagine? We were actually walking all over the place. We took hours and hours to just chill because we arrived way sooner. I arrived 2 weeks beforehand to clear the jet lag because it would affect me substantially during the show. I knew this. So for about 5 days, 6 days, we were just walking around, clearing the jet lag, and we saw a lot of poverty and it was quite shocking. And
what part of LA were you in? What part of LA?
Well, certainly we were also in Beverly Hills and none of that in Beverly Hills, but that's not surprising. We were in Hollywood. Hollywood was horrible. We were in Culver City. We were near the airport. We were in Palisades. Palisades, beautiful. Santa Monica. We were in Venice Beach, not so beautiful there. We talked a lot with people around about this, and it's sad to see. Apparently, San Francisco is a lot worse.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that you're naming off like all these different cities and how they're so different, because local government plays a huge part in the amount of poverty that you see, because LA has a huge homelessness problem, but depending on where you go, you'll see more or less of it. So it's interesting to hear your experience.
Yes, I mean, you know, it just came to us. We were just, of course, just focused on our trip, but it was something that I hadn't seen. Mind you, I was planning 10 years ago to settle in Los Angeles. We were there with my family to look for property. I was very committed. I got my talent visa on the passport, ready to work. Then I moved to France, as you know, Alex. I veer off to another direction and settle in Cannes, which was, I think, a great idea. But But Los Angeles is a city that I like, that I genuinely, I wouldn't say love because that would be over the top, but I wholeheartedly at least.
You'll be far too American, Luke. We can't really have that, like, you know.
No, but I really, really like the place. The nature is stunning. There's so many things that are great about it, but there's a very weird vibe at the moment that everybody's talking about also. And I hope they can sort it out anyway.
I felt the same actually about a recent trip down to London, which also had evidence of homelessness and so on. But that's another edition entirely. Graham, any little closing questions you got for either Luke or Juliet or Tosin or Victoria or Jessica?
I'd like to go to Victoria, who we met in Covent Garden recently. That evening, you were off to do a concert somewhere close by. And I'd just like to know how that went.
It was so good. I think it was the best show I've ever done. And for it to be in London, that was really, really good. And even on one of the, I only got to do two songs, but on one of them, it was more upbeat, the Touch the Stars. And after the first verse, the first chorus, sorry, everybody was actually singing along to the chorus, even though they'd only ever heard it once. So that was quite nice to hear.
Wow, that's really good.
It's an awesome track, and we're going to hear it in a few moments, Victoria. But Luke, sure. Astonishingly, we have to throw those last two questions initially at yourself. Have you had a reasonably interesting, albeit slightly brief, Zoomer with us on the program today?
Of course. I mean, you know, I just apologize. I was late, but, you know, I'm always around for you, Alex. So don't give up on me.
I remember the time we sat on the side, the banks of the River Thames, talking about Brexit is never going to happen, really. And then look what took place. But still, never mind. That's another issue entirely.
Was that 10 years ago or thereabout? It was a long time ago.
Different time. Juliet Lamar, has it been good for you being back on the Midweek Drive in the middle of a writer's strike?
Absolutely. I mean, we always have the most wonderful people here with the most intuitive insight, and it's always a pleasure to join you all.
Yeah.
Tosin, has it been good for your good self from Nigeria? Obviously not in Nigeria at present, but has it helped with your dissertation?
Yes, a lot. A way lot that I thought it would. Thank you so much, Alex.
Excellent. Victoria, only a matter of months before you're performing at an even more wonderful place than London. That would be Lincoln, England, not Nebraska. So has it been good for you?
It's been really good. And hopefully if anybody's in Lincoln at the time, they can come and see us.
Well, I'm sure Graham will be on the train, if it's running, of course, because it is Britain. We don't do things like public transport. Graham, many thanks. I take it it's been good for you, Graham Harper?
It's always good. I really enjoy doing them.
And Jessica, has it helped your recovery in Charlotte, North Carolina, even though you haven't had a chance to ask the sweet tea question?
Yes, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Then I take it we'll all return to Luke Carradine. Luke, how can people follow you on the web? How can people listen to your music?
Well, just by actually Google my name, Luke Carradine, CORRADINE. I'm pretty much everywhere. There's reviews, music. I've got a YouTube channel. I've got a TikTok channel even.
You'd be saying you're on X next.
Yes. I am doing quite, I'm actually digging my TikTok. I've learned how to train it, and now it's giving me the information I want. And I'm it's well behaved. None of the crap that people are talking about.
Training the TikTok is another text entirely with ChatGPT and so on. To Graham Harper, to Juliet Lamar, to Luke Carradine, to Tosin Siemi, to Victoria Simmons and Jessica Burtis. Huge thanks. Victoria, would you like to introduce yourself because your music is up next?
Okay, this is the song that I sang in London, and it's called Touch the Stars.
She had the face of an angel, but the emptiest eyes. And she was drawn like a pilgrim to celebrity's life. She's looking out for a big name, fame and luxury swear in the sights. She ain't gonna leave alone tonight.
built like Adonis. He was carved out of stone, but there ain't nothing behind it, just the muscle and bone. He comes for me to find later.